right, two-part episode. We have a whole bunch of stuff going on, so we might as well get right into it. This is Season 6, Episode 17 and 18, The Delivery, originally airing on March 4th, 2010. They aired together, but they were written and directed by two different people, the two parts here, and that's why they have kind of two different numbers. So, yeah, we have this long episode. They have a strange middle, but I think we're going to follow some threads here so that we can keep things in line and tell you all about it.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff going on here. One thing I like about this episode is that, you know, some of the other hour-long episodes we've covered and others even in the series feel like there's filler sometimes. See the Jack Black movie, but this one, like, everything moves forward, and I don't feel like any of these secondary plot lines are there just to fill the time. Like, I feel like this is a really full hour-long episode.
Yeah, even the part where Michael kind of plays matchmaker in the second half, that at first feels like filler, but it moves along the Andy-Aaron relationship, right. So that's good.
Yeah.
So we should probably start. There isn't even really a cold open in this. There's like a room temperature open where it seems like maybe it's like the day before, you know? And they discuss Pam's maternity leave, and she starts using that as a way to get sales because it doesn't look like she's really taking maternity leave. Like, once we get into the episode, she's in labor in the office. So the whole maternity leave, like, you leave a little bit before the baby is born, like through the baby being born, it doesn't seem like she's taking the before part at all.
Mm-mm.
No.
No. As we see, she waits too long to go to the hospital.
She really wants to get, she loves that office so much. She just has to stay. But I get it, because the more days that you work, the more sales that you would make if you are in the sales, and it's worth it to them to do something like that. So the room temperature open, Jim and Pam are both using the maternity leave and the pregnancy in order to make sales. Dwight finds this abhorrent, and he is very offended until Pam reminds him that there's nothing wrong with talking about your life in order to get sales. So Dwight tries it for himself and fails miserably.
Hey there, Dwight Schrute here. Listen, would you be interested in restocking on paper?
Yeah, I could sure use the money. My cousin came down with a case of that nasty new goat fungus. Oh, it's just horrific. The doctor says he's never seen it beard so quickly. Okay.
He's never seen it beard so quickly, which is a very upsetting phrase. I did not search for goat fungus on the internet because I don't need to know.
I like that he realizes that goat fungus isn't as cute as a baby.
I need a baby. I'll never outsell Jim and Pam without one.
And this cold open actually sparks the thread of him and Angela starting to rekindle their air quotes relationship.
Yeah, we'll get there. It's weird.
And he's feeling nesty. I like that Dwight admits that he's feeling a little bit nesty and he wakes up cradling a gourd.
Who hasn't done that?
I mean, that's how I knew that it was time to have kids. When you wake up with gourds in your arms, you're like, oh, I know what this means.
I need a baby. So we see Pam. She is in the beginning parts of labor. And we see her contractions come on a more regular and frequent basis throughout the first part of this episode. We find out the reason they're waiting is that their insurance will cover two nights in the hospital. So they want to check in after midnight to get like the maximum time before they have to go home, which I get and understand. But Pam goes too far with it, as we'll get to. Michael is worried that she's having contraptions all over the place.
Oh, ho, ho, ho! Contraptions! She's contrapting!
Oh, Michaelisms. But yeah, the whole office is involved in Pam's labor. But the one thing I like about this is that it wasn't like, oh, wow, I felt a contraction. Let's rush to the hospital like every other show does, like every show, every movie when someone is pregnant. It's a rare thing for it to seem more realistic. And this does seem more realistic because it always drives me crazy that they always dramatize the, oh no, I felt a contraction. Everyone rush to the hospital. Like that's how it usually goes in media. Yeah. And with this, we kind of see this prolonged thing happening through the entire day.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the labor itself is fairly real because like we're not seeing her screaming in pain the entire time. We're seeing her manage through because really having a baby takes a long time.
Yeah. Yeah. I have I've been a present for three of them and it is this felt very realistic, like the build up and then all of a sudden it sort of turns the corner. You're like, oh, it's time now. I do have a story about this, though,
okay.
that I'd like to share about so much of this episode is so good about first time parents. Like we'll get into Jim and how he's really good at some things and just utterly terrible at other things. Mm-hmm. Very first time parent situation for Jim there. So when Mary was pregnant with our first, she was like, fine. She had the checkup. She was like, you know, not super anytime soon. They were going to induce her, I think, like two or three days kind of from where this story takes place. And so it was like a Friday or Saturday night. They were going to induce on a Monday, I think. And my old college roommate and I decided, like, well, let's go out and, like, you know, have a couple beers. It'll be like, you know, sort of last hurrah before, you know, the baby comes, right? And so I'm into my second beer, and Mary calls me, is like, I'm having contractions. Like, they've gotten stronger. I think maybe it's time to go to the hospital. So I go, we get her, we go to the hospital. Turns out, like you said perfectly in so much media, oh, kind of a false alarm, like, not really time yet, you know, go home and come back when this and this happens. But because it was basically the middle of the night on the weekend, we were kind of stuck at the hospital for a little while. It wasn't like we strolled in at 3 p.m. and there was somebody just to like check pretty quickly. And so I turn on the TV. I'm like, oh, let's just like, you know, we're trying to like distract ourselves. We're trying to decide, like, do we call our parents? Do we not call our parents? Like, what do we do? And like, oh, let's just see what's on the Discovery Channel. Like, maybe there'll be like a Mythbusters or like something fun to watch. And I swear to you, this is the truth. I turned it to Discovery Channel, like the cable TV in the hospital room. And you remember like Mike Rowe's Dirtiest Jobs?
Yeah.
Show?
Oh, yeah.
He'd like go to a town and like their like sewer crew would like teach him how to clean out the sewers or whatever.
Yeah.
I thought it was a pretty fun show. Like you learn about all these jobs. It was the episode where he's on a dairy farm. And as we turn it on, he's being taught how to do a C-section on a cow.
Oh, God.
And Mary was like, turn the, off, like just like a string of words, turn the TV off. It was the worst possible thing that could have been on television.
Oh my gosh.
Cow C-section.
Oh, why would that be on television? I don't need that. No one needs that.
Well, you're going through the side. It's very surprising.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I guess you're going through the side. Because how are you going to get like a cow to lay down on its back?
Yeah.
You're not. And you can't go through the top. There's a whole bunch of other stuff there. So yeah, the side doesn't make sense.
Like a spine. through the spine.
We're getting away from ourselves. Cow C-sections. The Office. Mm. Very closely related. one person who is present in the office who hasn't been before or very little before is the IT guy, Nick. He's kind of like hovering around this entire episode. And I think that that's really funny. It's a nice little touch that shows that he's not just like there for one day to set up passwords. He is kind of like this background person that now works out of the office.
Mm-hmm. Although he does disappear pretty soon for a while. But yeah, he's like hanging around. No one likes him. He like trying to make jokes.
Oh, he makes a lousy joke, though. Come on.
Well, you don't want to wait too long, Pam. Otherwise, the baby's going to become a teenager in there and you'll be up all night from the rock music.
Shut up, Nick. God. A weird thing to say. Weird IT nerd. Don't get revenge on me, nerd.
He was in the conference room also, like in the back during the...
Oh, was he?
Yeah. He's just kind of back there.
Yeah. Michael has spent time baby-proofing the office because he assumes the baby was conceived there. Jim says that the baby was conceived at Burning Man in a porta potty, which I'm pretty sure is a joke.
Yeah, it's a joke.
Ugh.
Jim makes a lot of like his off to the side jokes during this episode. He's very, very panicked and frazzled, as we find out. But
frazzled.
Yes, he she doesn't like being frazzled. But he makes a lot of like funny little offhanded jokes that, because I feel like around a birth of a child and around these like life events, everyone kind of has like a standard thing that they say. And Jim is deflecting almost all of them with some funny little quip of, oh, yes, if you were wondering about when the baby was conceived, it was a Burning Man in the toilet. Like, it's just, you know, one of those things to, it's a funny way to off-put just the eye-rolling tropes that people end up saying to you.
He's freaking out, as most first-time dads do.
He is freaking out, but Pam calls on the master of distraction, Michael, in order to help her get through some of the contractions. And Michael is all too enthused to call a conference room meeting where everyone goes in and tries to distract Pam. This upsets Jim so much because he wants to be the one that helps her, but he's so panicked and just wants her to go to the hospital, like, because he doesn't want to see her in pain. He has no idea like what's really happening. Pam feels in control, and he even says that she's the quarterback and gets to make the decisions.
So the plan was 7 minutes, but we're calling an audible because that's her call, because she's the quarterback. I'm just the left tackle who happened to get her pregnant.
He's trying to be supportive of the things that Pam is wanting to do to get herself through this labor. But at the same time, he is so panicked and he just wants to see, like, let's just get to the hospital because that's the next thing we have to do. And he just wants to, like, check that task off his list so badly.
There's a scene a little bit later on when her contractions are becoming more frequent and he, like, has a stack of baby books that he picks up from Pam's desk and, like, reads, like, 5 to 7 minutes, 5 to 7 minutes. You know, he's, like, trying to infuse logic into this and trying to have some sort of control, even though I think he does recognize that it is Pam's decision. He's like, okay, well, these agreed upon things, you know, we're just throwing them overboard left and right.
I'm not crazy. She's crazy. 5 to 7 minutes. 5 to 7 minutes. 6 minutes. Different, but not really. 5 to 7 minutes.
And he hates that everyone's helping her, like, yeah, indulging her in these ideas of not going to the hospital and waiting as long as possible. But really, like, I completely understand, like, coming from the Pam side of things, like, I get it. Like, I get the whole, once you go to the hospital, there's, like, you have so much less control over yourself and your agency and what you're able to do and how you're able to just, like, get through this yourself. And I totally understand the idea of, like, kind of not wanting to go yet, but we understand, we find out that Pam ends up not wanting to go partly out of fear, that she is a little bit panicked about having a baby and she's mentally trying to put it off as long as possible. She's still trying to get to Ultra Feast with Kevin, like anything she could possibly do to avoid going to the hospital and really facing what she is about to do is where she's coming from too. And in that moment, I really love how good couples, like functioning couples, one person when they're panicking and the other person is calm, and then the calm person starts to panic, the panic person switches and becomes calm and supportive. Like, I love that. We've seen that multiple times here in the office, especially with Pam and Jim. But this is like a really pivotal point. And I love seeing that in their relationship. And I love seeing that in a healthy relationship. Because as soon as she starts to panic, he is right there to support her. He puts his frazzling aside and he's able to talk her down from her panic state.
Yeah. No, it is great. And again, like, so much of this episode feels so real. I've got to hand it to the writing in this one. Like, that's a great example of how a good couple should function and very often how the roles actually work in these sort of situations. So it is really great. We should probably get back to the conference room meeting, though. Which, by the way, Jim can't stop because he's not a co-manager anymore. Everybody dunks on him for that, which is funny.
Yeah, Dwight loves it. Dwight loves that moment.
We see Dwight and Angela sneak out. We'll get back to them and what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
Andy dances. Can't have music, can't have clapping. So you just hear his, like, pants moving around.
He tries to do the evolution of Dance Dance. You know what that is, right?
Yes, I looked it up on YouTube while watching this.
Everyone watched that on YouTube. How would you not know?
I need complete silence. Totally threw me off, so I'm gonna have to start over. Evolution of Dance Dance.
Yeah, handy. Ryan reads a poem. There's some deleted scenes about the poem. Maybe Ryan didn't actually write it, but he reads a poem.
You let me in your bed, but now I sleep alone, trapped with the forgotten in my detritus home.
Erin rattles off Kentucky Derby winners.
I find that impressive.
Information she has in her head, I guess.
Affirmed, Seattle SLU, Secretariat, Citation, Assault, Count Fleet, Whirlaway, War Admiral, Omaha, Gallant Fox, and I know this. The jockey was Johnny Loftus, sired by Starshoot.
And Michael has gone on the internet and printed out some ways to induce labor and says, well, let's do the opposite of those things. They only get through two items on the list because Jim sort of just puts a stop to it when the list says don't eat spicy foods. And so Kevin recommends putting spicy foods up her butt.
Because that's obviously the opposite.
I mean, it's not the opposite.
Okay, the second one is walk around. We're already doing the opposite of that. Perfect. Okay, number three, eat spicy foods.
Okay, the opposite of that.
Stick spicy food up her butt.
Nope. Come on, let's go to the hospital.
Jim,
Pam, let's go to the hospital now.
I love you, mm-hmm. but you're really distracting me from my distractions.
My almost nine-year-old was watching this episode with me, and he really liked that part. He thought it was very funny.
Oh, yeah. No, that's definitely like a boy joke.
Yeah, he lost it. He thought that was the best.
Jim's like, nope, not doing that.
Jim gets so frazzled and frustrated. He leaves the meeting and I love that he just goes, sits in his car. And Pam eventually comes around, finds him sitting in the car, and mm-hmm. Pam is comforting him, saying it's okay, everything is fine. She accidentally lets slip about having a little girl. She says she instead, and I love Jim's reaction here.
You don't have to worry. Try not to think about it. She's not coming out for a while, okay?
Did you say she?
I called the doctor like a week ago. I couldn't wait. Oh, God, don't be mad.
Mad? How could I be mad? We're having a little girl.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, we're having a little girl. Oh, man.
I know.
Whew, all right. Well, I definitely feel better.
Good.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
He's so sweet. He doesn't get angry or upset or like, how could you reveal this? We were, you know, that's usually like a source of a couple fight in media around a baby. It's one person wants to know, another person doesn't. Someone finds out, there's a small fight about it, but there's none of that here. Like Jim is just his reaction and his call like for it. He's so supportive and it's like a wonderful moment between them where they discuss that they're having a little girl and they reveal that to each other. It's so nice. And right on the heels of that, Jim notices that Pam is wearing different clothes and she says, oh, don't worry about it. My water broke. And she just like goes back inside. And that was the tipping point. He's like, oh no. Like,
yeah. He's like, wait, what?
Because if anyone out there is having or knows anything about having babies, once your water breaks, then it becomes time to, you know, really focus on the situation and things are going to start escalating a little bit more quickly after this happens, generally speaking. So and again, a testament to the reality of this, we've seen them now, like Pam laboring for hours before her water breaks. And that's another thing in media where it's like, oh no, I felt a contraction. Ooh, my water broke. Let's go to the hospital and deliver this 15-pound baby, which, you know, like, it's just so all unrealistic. And I feel like it makes people, like, really surprised when they actually end up having children how different it actually is. And yeah. And this is really, it's a little bit more on the side of realism where your water breaks, like, much, much later.
Yep. At this point, we see Ultra Feast.
Pregnant Pam and I, we get hungry at the same times, so we've been eating together a lot. Not all meals, just second breakfast, lunch, second lunch, and first dinner. I thought that maybe we should do something special for early dinner. One last Ultra Feast.
Mmm.
That sounds great. What are you thinking?
It has been put together. The theme is Hollywood. So there's Ratatouille from Ratatouille.
Mm-hmm.
That's the one that jumped out at me. And it's clear that, yeah, Pam is progressing in her labor. And this is where we get that moment you alluded to a little while ago about she really freaks out. She doesn't want to go. She's worried she can't do it. And we see Jim and secondarily Michael and Kevin working to encourage her.
It's fine. Really hey, come on, come on. Come no, on, I'm go. Not going. I am not going, okay?
All
right. I'm not going today because I can't do it. I don't think I can do it.
Hey. Are you kidding me?
Are you kidding?
If anyone can do this, you can do this.
You can do this. You can do this.
Pam, I'm scared. I'm real scared.
I'm scared too.
I'm petrified.
But the best news is we're going to have a baby today.
Yeah.
A really awesome baby.
We're gonna have a baby.
So let's have it at the hospital.
Let's do that.
Michael kind of takes control for a minute. Is like, hey, you know, do you want your baby born here? No, I don't. Okay, well, we're gonna go to the hospital. We're gonna have a baby. Where are we going? What are we doing? And she's like, we're going to the hospital. We're having a baby. But then he Michaels it because he says that he'll drive them. He has to stop Dwight with a measuring tape to see how dilated she is. We're sure that's not how you do it.
Did anyone check how dilated she is? This is ridiculous.
Dwight, get away.
No. Dwight, let Jim do that, please. Okay?
I didn't know we had a tape measure.
We don't.
Okay, I can't find my keys. I cannot find my keys. Found them. Here we go.
Here we go.
Good luck.
Good luck, Pam.
Bye. Thank you. Wish me luck.
Have fun.
There's a lot of panic that ensues once Pam agrees to go to the hospital. There's a lot of running around. It reminds me a little bit of the fire drill scene.
Yeah.
Things are getting thrown around. There's an empty go bag. There's yelling. There's jumping over furniture. It's quite dramatic, but it is really funny. I like to see everyone reacting this way. And mm-hmm. Dwight takes it upon himself to escort them to the hospital because he loves escorting people. And that also... That leads to him getting pulled over and impersonating a police officer. I love that part where he's throwing. What does he throw out of his car? Like a machete?
Yeah, it's a machete and I think an axe or something. As he's being pulled over, the cop knows calls him by name, which is really a nice detail.
What? Oh, you're kidding me!
You're not allowed to impersonate a police officer. Don't make this difficult, Dwight.
I do love that. It's a wonderful nod to him possibly being like that, what was it, a volunteer deputy?
Volunteer sheriff's deputy, yeah, in season two.
Yep, and also probably he is doing escorts and impersonating people a whole bunch.
I mean, he had like the siren light in the car already.
Yeah, all plugged in, hooked up, ready to go. It's pretty great. Mm-hmm. I do love that it shows that there's more of a community around these people than just them in the office, that the police officer calls out Dwight while pulling him over.
Yeah.
But for some reason, Jim and Pam, well, Jim was prepared to drive to the hospitals. We saw he was waiting in his car earlier. And instead, they get in the car with Michael, which I find that to be a strange choice, but maybe they were all just so frazzled at the moment and rushing out the way they did that they just get in the car with Michael. And Michael's driving. Dwight is kind of escorting. It's like a whole scene. And they realize while Jim and Pam are back in the backseat of Michael's car that Pam doesn't have her iPod with the birth song on it. And again, another fantastic nod to reality. First-time parents... You try and plan the birth so well. And I think a lot of places and books and teachers or any kind of classes that you take, they encourage you to do that because I think it's kind of a way to distract from what you're actually going to be doing. Like, here, make this plan. Think about what you're going to be doing. Like, what will distract you? Think about the special music you're going to play. But it also, like, puts all this expectation on this is what it needs to be. And that's exactly how Pam reacts, is that like, we need to get this one particular song. I can't just listen to any music. And really, in reality, you don't have time or attention to listen to music or do any of that stuff at all. But that's how you feel. Like, this is how you get through it. You focus on these like little minor things. And Michael calls up Dwight to run to Pam and Jim's house to pick up the iPod. And we will also circle back around to talk about Dwight going into their house, which might be my favorite part of the episode.
Yeah, it's really good. It's really good. She doesn't want her baby born to the 8 Mile soundtrack, which will be on Jim's iPod.
So Jim's an Eminem fan, huh?
Hey, it's of its time.
It is. Yep.
So they get to the hospital. Michael parks the car in an ambulance bay. And EMT's like, what are you doing? You can't park here. And he says, I just did. And then throws Jim keys like into the woods next to the hospital.
So that is where the episode breaks. And we have the start of the second episode. And it opens with Jim in the hospital talking to the camera, explaining that it is now 19 hours later.
Pam's doing great. She's 10 inches dilated now. Sorry, meters. Centimeters. And she's also fully effaced, which I don't know what that is. But no baby yet. It's only been 19 hours.
Mm.
And
poor Pam. That's
Pam
rough.
She's still in labor. So one little detail from the previous episode, when they were all leaving in the chaos, the whole office realized it's 5 o'clock and they all try and get in the elevator as Pam is trying to also leave. And I found that detail to be really funny.
It is funny.
They lock out Toby. Toby was the one that didn't fit in the elevator.
No, we're going to come back to Toby.
Yes. Oh, we'll also come back to Toby. Ah, I'm so excited to come back.
Yeah. So it's 19 hours later. Jim was sent out to get some ice because he fainted a little bit. I will admit that I nearly fainted during our first.
Did you really?
And with the second and third, I didn't look so closely. Yeah. The blackness was coming in, like, you know, like you, like, in, I don't know, like in photos, like you turn the vignette all the way up. That's how it was. It was like blackness, blackness, blackness.
Oh,
and the nurse, like,
so
grabbed my
you.
Arm and, like, shook me, like, Steven. And then I was okay. I stayed north of the border for children number 2 and 3.
How long? How long were the labors for your children?
Oh, I'm trying to think. I think the longest was maybe 6 or 7 hours.
Oh, she's lucky. I had 24 hours.
Oh, man.
It sucked. It was awful.
Yeah, I bet. The second one was, Allison was so fast that, because she was a little smaller, that Mary's doctor was like on her way. And like a med student caught the baby. oh, it's coming. Right. She's coming right now. So we start to see people filter in. We see Andy come in with a gift. I really like Andy's gift. So it's a framed front page paper of the Scranton newspaper from the day that she was supposed to be born.
Mm-hmm.
But and the headline was about, like, it was like, spring has sprung, like, you know, the first day of spring is a nice gift. I think that's pretty cool.
Yeah, very cool.
But you took her sweet time to get here. And so today's paper says Scranton Strangler strikes again, which I think is the first time we've heard about the Strangler. And some people on this podcast who aren't me, but will remain nameless, think that Toby is the Strangler. And that Toby is mad because Pam had a child with somebody else, and so he had to go out and get his strangle on.
That's exactly what happened. Oh, he got locked out of the elevator, too. He was having a bad day. He got locked out of the elevator, and then he went strangling. And where is he now? He's nowhere. We didn't see him at all. Mm-mm. Mm-hmm.
Got to get the strangle off his hands.
It's totally his rage. It's his rage strangle. It's for Pam. It's for the love that he doesn't have. It's true.
We'll see.
Phyllis has an ice cream cake in the car.
This is ridiculous. We just can't wait here.
I think it's going to be any minute now.
But you don't know that. I mean, we could be here another half an hour.
Phyllis, what could you possibly have to do?
I have an ice cream cake in the car.
Oh, my God. Go, go, go. Are you insane?
So it is funny to see everyone kind of showing up and mulling around. I did not have anyone visit at the hospital because I did not want them to. So this whole like dog and pony show of mm-hmm. all of these people showing up at the hospital, coworkers, it's a lot. Almost everyone is there. But again, if you think about this in a kind of meta way, that they are on a documentary, that this, you know, group of people knew that a film crew would essentially be following these two people having a baby, that of course they would kind of show up as like a sign of support. Because I feel like if you are spending all of these years getting filmed, you have more of a bond than you would have if you were just coworkers. And
I could see that.
And so like, that's kind of how I'm justifying like the extra involvement all of these people have in each other's lives that feels so much further than most like mid-level kind of corporate office jobs would warrant.
Mm-hmm. So about this time, Jim comes out. He announces her name and size. Michael keeps interrupting with fake weights. This is a thing that Michael does. He interrupts somebody trying to give real information, and he interrupts with fake information.
Her name is Cecilia Marie Halpert.
11 pounds.
She's 7 pounds, 2 ounces, 18 inches, mother and daughter doing great.
Because he loves a good announcement.
He does.
He loves being the MC. I mean, that's exactly what he is trying to be. And he, you know, steals Jim's thunder a little bit here, but Jim does, he just takes it in stride.
Mm-hmm. He's used to it at this point.
Mm-hmm.
We also see Michael come in with those balloons, and Pam's mom is there. Remember, Michael broke up with her not that long ago. And that's like just super awkward and uncomfortable. Helene ends up leaving after getting a really weird hug from Michael. But this is where we learn Jim is really good at diapering.
I am a diapering master. I have done little else in the past 2 months. There is nothing I cannot diaper. Go ahead, try to think of something. I dare you.
He's diapered a football. He diapered Angela's cat, which Angela is not pleased with whatsoever.
Which I find strange. She should think it's cute because she loves all those like weird baby posters.
Yeah.
You know, I feel like she would be into the cat diapering.
But it's someone else doing it, maybe.
Mm, that's true.
So it sets her off.
And that is garbage, right? Garbage is back?
That is garbage.
AKA Bandit.
AKA Bandit. Mm-hmm. Definitely the same cat.
Yep.
Andy just regifted the cat.
I think the cat just lives there because we did see it in a filing cabinet. So I believe that's just the, like the secret office cat that Angela has.
Say Bandit! So, yeah, and we see Pam and Jim kind of go through, you know, the first couple of hours of being parents. The nurse and Jim in particular have a little bit of friction, right? They think, Pam and Jim think they know everything because they've read the books. The nurse is not impressed because a bunch of parents read all the books. And it's, you know, it's kind of awkward at times with the nurse. I think people have been in that situation.
I mean, I can see both sides. You know, like you want to be able to have agency over your own care and the baby and like what you want to do as parents. But at the same time, you do have someone who is a seasoned nurse, but they are, again, like they're trained and given information in like this one way to do things. I don't know. I just see there's so many thousands of different ways to have children and babies and all this kind of stuff. And it's such a personal decision. So I get the tension.
There's this, little hiccup that, they have a little trouble breastfeeding. So the nurse like, hey, we have a lactation consultant comes in. Jim's not super thrilled that it's a dude, but he is played by Jenna Fisher's real-life husband. So one of the quotes I read about this was someone said that they cast him so he could, quote, really go for it.
I love that. This is the first time I found this out, like this information, just on this watch of the episode. I never knew that before, but I'm glad they did that.
Yeah. And so, you know, he gives her some advice. They continue to struggle a little bit. Jim is like, you gotta, like, push the milk out. He does this like weird like chest curl thing. Just not how it works.
Which is so infuriating. He is so just like backseat driving breastfeeding. It's like, stop. Like, don't know what you're talking about.
I can't tell if she's getting anything.
Really?
It doesn't feel right.
Well, you're pushing the milk out, right?
How would one do that?
Wasn't it? It's kind of like that.
Do you want to try it, Jim?
Mm-mm.
I think you're good. You're doing a good job.
Another couple comes in and they have to share the room after they've kind of had like the room to themselves for most of the time. And Jim and Pam are both like fascinated by the ease at which everything is going for the other mother and baby on the other side of the room.
Yeah. Kind of spying a little bit.
Yeah. They're like looking a little bit too long. I don't know. I'd pull that curtain. Later that evening, when the baby is fussing, Jim and Pam are just, they are exhausted, as new parents often are, and they just kind of sleepily reach for the baby as because the baby is fussing, and so they go right into, all right, I guess the baby's hungry, let's feed them. And they do. I love the reveal in the morning when they have a visitor come. It is Isabel, who we remember from the wedding, who hooked up with Dwight, and she comes in. They chat to each other for a little bit, and they wake up. Pam is thrilled that she finally was able to have a successful like feeding with the baby. And they look down and it's the wrong baby.
Oh my God.
What?
Wrong baby.
What?
Wrong baby. This is not our baby. Oh my
God. They grabbed the other baby. I love this. Besides what Dwight ends up doing at their house, that might be the funniest part of this episode, because it just kind of happened and it was a reveal that I did not expect. I remember the first time watching this. It's so good.
Yeah. Pam's like, wrong baby, like trying to like yell but not make any noise.
And it is kind of upsetting. Like, I don't know why that feels so upsetting, like that kind of a mix up, but the way Jim puts the baby back into like that little wheelie cart that they have babies in hospitals and just like pushes it as far as he can back to the other side of the room. It's so good. And then later on, the best part about it is when Pam is still trying to like figure out how to get things working with Cecilia, their baby, Cece, as we eventually know her, that she even mentions, she's like, well, with the other baby, before Jim hushes her down, which is,
yeah,
it's so good.
But nothing happened.
Well, I feel like she needs to eat, but she just won't latch on, which is weird because the other baby did.
Because yeah. How do you tell another couple like I accidentally fed your baby? I mean, I guess it's fine. Like nothing bad is going to happen, but it is weird. I fed a strange baby.
Yeah. So at this point, Pam and Jim are getting pretty close to being ready to go. They sort of have this back and forth about half an hour or 25 minutes. And the nurse is like, no, 25 minutes, not half an hour. We find out that the car seat has not been installed, which if you're out there listening and you're not a person with a car seat in your life, it's actually a really big deal to have it installed correctly. And in a lot of places, you can go to like a police station or a fire station, and they'll do it for you, because you have to have it super tight and got to be done correctly. And like the base is just connected to it. This is where I think like, okay, Jim, you diapered a lot, but maybe you should spend a little more time on other things too, to get this right. But
yeah, Jim is selectively prepared for this pregnancy. And I like that. I like that he isn't the perfect new father. He doesn't have everything handled. He isn't like doing everything 100% right. He is still kind of like undermining Pam when it comes to breastfeeding, or he's still not installing the car seat. Like there's stuff that happens when they eventually leave, which the hospital seems to be trying to get them to leave for a while, and they eventually max out their stay. They leave. Pam doesn't even stand up out of the wheelchair that they have to wheel you out of the hospital in. And Jim doesn't even realize he needs to go get the car, like pull the car up. There's just so much of that new parent frazzle that's present in this. Like it's seeing them get things wrong is really great. And it's a nice testament to the idea that this is a mockumentary, that this is more reality based. It's not just like a comedy for us to laugh at the antics that are happening. It's a glimpse into these people's lives, and they keep it grounded in that way, even in something like a birth episode, which often gets like glorified and like all this, so much stuff gets brushed over and we never see like these little moments where, you know, Pam is left alone waiting with a crying baby outside of the hospital and no one is there. Like, these vulnerable moments that we get from these characters really ends up endearing us to them.
So should we move on to what Dwight's up to?
First, I want to say that Pam and the baby eventually do have a successful feeding together, which is a big thing.
Yes.
Jim finally shows up with the car, and I guess the car seat installed. I don't know. It usually takes a lot longer than that, but we'll just one line of dialogue. We'll brush that aside. And he sits with her, and they have this wonderful little moment.
Hey.
Hi. We did it.
You used my move, didn't you?
I used a variation of your move.
And I really love that. I love how they close that out with the two of them together. That there is, even though they are tired and exhausted and they just went through like all of this extreme drama from the beginning of the day, trying to get Pam to go to the hospital, to like having, you know, breastfeeding problems and the delivery and everything. And now they're just on this little bench as this little family of three.
It's nice.
It's really nice.
Yeah. So let's check in with Dwight. He's trying to fill this gaping hole in his life.
He is trying to fill a gaping hole, which he was cradling gourds, but he never shows up to the birth. We don't see him. But what we do see is we see where he ends up when he was supposed to go back to Pam and Jim's house to find an iPod.
Yeah. So he can't find the iPod, but he does find mold in the kitchen. And he can't have that. So he says, you know, I spent the night. We see him get out of their bed naked. And he's like turned the picture of Pam and Jim down so they can't look at him while he's asleep. But then they look at him as he gets out of their bed naked. And he has a couple friends over and he starts to demolish their kitchen. He's just going to remodel it for them to get rid of the mold. I think this is much more about the mold than doing something nice for Jim and Pam, but they get a new kitchen out of it.
I wrote down, I was like, Dwight breaks into Jim and Pam's house. He broke their window. He ransacked their house, like looking for the iPod, which apparently also the camera people didn't find, because I was almost expecting like one of those pan moments where the camera takes a look at the thing that the person is looking for and is like just sitting over there, obvious. Yeah. But we never got that. So I totally believe that he could not find it. So he ransacks their house. He sleeps naked in their bed and then he begins to demo their kitchen. Like the series of events that happen with Dwight getting to the house. Pam tries to tell him where the hidden key is, but he doesn't want to hear it. Instead, he wants to break the window with his elbow. So, you know, because that's very Dwight. He has a mission. This is Dwight being on a mission, just like we often see Michael trying to be the MC. This is Dwight trying to be on some sort of like fantasy, you know, big masculine recon mission that he's trying to have. And then when he finds the mold and he starts demoing the kitchen, this also makes sense because when he was at the dinner party at David Wallace's house, he basically did like a home inspection. So this is something he's very into.
Very into seeing how other people's homes are stacking up. It's not the only thing Dwight has going on, though. So earlier in the episode in part one, he and Angela have one of their weird meetings where they aren't looking at each other, but they're talking.
Bear my child.
Excuse me?
I want to have a child for business reasons, and I want you to be the mother. If you agree, say nothing. If you disagree, say anything.
He suggests a 4 p.m. meeting to bang it out at their old meeting space, which is that weird, it almost looks like a giant freezer in the Dunder Mifflin warehouse. But
yeah.
Maybe it was a freezer from like a previous tenant. That's sort of my mental explanation for that.
Yeah. Okay. I like that. That's canon now. Done.
Yeah. And so we're going to bang it out. And so she shows up and they're not banging it out. They're doing Something even more exciting to Angela, they're having a meeting about paperwork.
Dwight has a typewriter down there in order to write a contract about the conception of a future child.
Angela is to breastfeed and then for 6 months and then wean to a nutrient-rich vegetable mash provided by the father, who is now named Morpheus in the contract.
Yeah, Dwight's contract skills are questionable. He definitely takes an element of fantasy into these things.
Yeah.
And he is trying to assert a lot of control over what this pregnancy would be. But it kind of makes sense when we hear about his, you know, Shroot family traditions. I can see where this is all coming from. And if they're doing it for business purposes, a contract makes total sense.
Sure. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not that it's weird or creepy in any way.
No, not at all.
The contract also dictates that the child should be male.
Angela quickly dismisses that. At least she has some sense enough to be like, no, we can't. No, that's not happening.
Dwight has some sort of medieval remedy to make sure the child is male. About like, you have to like keep the uterus cold for this long and then warm for this long. Angela's like, no, that's ridiculous.
Section 5A, child shall be male.
Hey, I cannot control that. You can't put that in here.
Yes, you can.
No.
It's as simple as keeping the womb extremely warm for 2 days after sex, and then extremely cold for 5 months.
Absolutely not.
I'm glad she has a line somewhere.
They don't end up, I guess, starting the child process? The adult playtime?
Starting the child process. Wow.
Yeah. Good. They don't end up actually banging it out.
Stage one of the contract.
Mm-hmm. They have to then have a meeting, a follow-up meeting, which they end up having at Jim and Pam's house, where they both notarize the contract. I find that very funny that they're both notaries. They take out all their, you know, their little stamps that they have, and they trade IDs, and they make it official.
This is about when Isabel drops by the house.
Yeah, she drops by a little bit earlier than the contract signing. So she comes by to drop off some food for Jim and Pam, runs into Dwight demoing the kitchen. But she and Dwight have kind of a little moment together.
Yeah, they do. There's a little flirting about how dentists are for adults, too. And Dwight just thinks that's silly.
Hey, listen, I know that I'm an adult, but maybe I could come by sometime for a teeth cleaning. You know, just for fun.
Adults are supposed to go to the dentist, too.
Are they now? How do some people spend their money?
And he's like, I'll call you. And she very, very seriously says, yeah, you should call me. But
yeah, and she gives the little flirty eyes like,
yeah,
they're into each other.
Dwight's doing. Isabel seems perfectly normal and nice. But it does leave an effect on him, because after they when they sign the contract, he's like, you know. Angel's like, well, how do you want to celebrate? He's like, I kind of feel sick.
He's reluctant to even sign his side. He was just like, he was about to back out.
Yeah. And then lastly, Pam and Jim come in holding the baby. And all Dwight says, and like they come into the scene, right? The refrigerator's in the backyard. Cabinets are in like pieces.
But someone's back there painting them. Like there is work happening.
Yeah. No, they're making progress.
Dwight's in like this sweaty, stained undershirt.
And all he says to them is, I couldn't find your iPod. And they just sort of walk away.
I couldn't find your iPod.
While all this is happening, also, there's a whole bunch of threads going on in this episode. Like you said, they keep it pretty packed. But we do get a check in on everybody else in the office, because Michael, after the birth of the baby and everyone was at the hospital, he is back at the office, basically exulting in his own success of getting Pam and Jim together. When really he had nothing to do with it. I believe even in a previous episode, he said something about them not being good for each other or something to that effect. But he is saying like he created a family. He's taking all the credit, which, you know, he loves to be the winner and the champion in any situation. And so he is going forth and he wants to help shoot everybody with love as he goes to the office, and he wants to play matchmaker again to see who else he can make a little family, because you know, he loves feeling involved in this kind of stuff.
I am offering up my services to you all. You saw what I did with Pam and Jim. I can help you, too.
Why don't you find someone for yourself instead of meddling in our affairs?
Okay, show of hands, who wants to live in a world where Stanley has two lovers and you don't have any?
Michael's a romantic, too. You know, like, I think Michael loves love and families and kids and marriage and affection. Like, he loves this stuff. And he very much wants it for himself, but right now he can't have what he wants for himself, so he's going to help everyone else.
He works to set up Aaron with Kevin. So Kevin is involved in sort of two of the minor plot lines here, which is fun. He invites Aaron in. Kevin is like hiding behind the door. Kevin has this line that says, he says, "You will learn to love me."
Oh, disturbing. you never want to say that. No.
No. They're going to have lunch in the break room, and Aaron tries to talk to Michael. He's like, look, I like Andy. You know, I don't want to be set up with Kevin. Andy is who I'm interested in. And Michael tells her, like, well, he has a giant heart. And then he goes on, like, he has an elephant heart. Okay, Michael.
Yeah, Michael tries to guilt her into at least having this one date with Kevin, because he feels a little bit bad that he promised this to Kevin, and he doesn't want to hurt Kevin's feelings. So he kind of like forces her into at least having this lunch in the break room.
And during all of this, Andy is sort of spying. He has this talking head about how he used to hide and watch people make fun of him, and then they'd make fun of him because he was hiding. Again, like more tragic backstory from Andy.
That whole talking head and then the couple little scenes of like Andy peeking behind the leaves of the plants, it seems so added on. It seemed like that almost should have been deleted. But I guess then we wouldn't have had like a through line for Andy to like be spying and overhearing this stuff and seeing that like he is concerned about Aaron's decision, because he's still not sure that she likes him. We've had the reveal that Aaron tells Michael that she likes Andy, but we haven't heard Aaron tell Andy that she likes Andy.
Yeah. And I think, like you said, it spurs Andy to action finally.
Finally.
And so, yeah, seriously, like, took your sweet time. So he has a fax that she's supposed to fax herself, and it's him asking her out.
The poor choices in these courtship. Like, it's so painful.
It is.
Because in this way that he's asking her out, finally asking her out, he ends up making her cry because she can't put the fax through. And then he like threatens her in this like really weird, upsetting way. It's very Michael fake firing people.
It's busy. Why don't I keep trying and then I'll give you the confirmation in a bit?
Well, sorry, that's unacceptable. I need you to send it immediately or you're fired.
You can't talk to me like that. I didn't do anything wrong. I've been having a tough day.
Oh, God, no. Just read the facts.
You read the facts.
I'm asking you out.
Andy says this and gets her very upset because Aaron takes her job very seriously and tries really hard to do a good job at it. And he turns it around by saying like, hey, I'm asking you out. He does apologize and he does feel bad, but man, it's not a good start.
No, you don't want to make her be upset and cry when you ask somebody out.
No.
Andy.
They are both disasters.
I think that's it.
Yeah, so that's all the threads. We followed them all. So now we have three Halperts. What is it? Cecilia Marie Halpert, born on the day that Scranton has had some strangling. Andy finally asks out Aaron.
Yeah.
And we will be back next week talking about the next episode, which is quite the jump, I feel like, because we just kind of had a Valentine's Day episode last week. Now the delivery, which was a double episode, and now we're going to be on to St. Patrick's Day, which is a big deal in the very Irish heavy communities of Pennsylvania. So I'm looking forward to it, even though we aren't near Patrick. We aren't near St. Patrick's Day yet. We were. We were so close. We were publishing our show on the same date that The Office was airing, and I was very excited for 2 weeks, and now we're off track again, but that's okay.
Well, we can still wear green next week.
Oh, okay. That sounds good. Let's all dress. Let's dress up. We'll all wear green.
I will wear a green t-shirt. That's as far as I can go.
I'm going green all the way down.
Okay.